Hey, it's Ben Greenfield. And if you use a computer, maybe you're using a computer right now. Maybe you're using a monitor right now. If you look at a monitor ever, you should listen into this podcast episode. Now, I'm going to warn you. My guest is, he's foreign. He's from, Bulgaria or Hungary or one of these other G, one of these other countries in Europe with a G in their title. So there's a little bit of kind of like an accent barrier, but consider that to be extreme brain training for your brain to have to be able to get through this dude's accent, because it actually is really good information. And the stuff that he's talking about, I'm now implementing on my computer. We talk about ways that you can literally make a monitor very healthy for your eyes and your body. And we get into a whole bunch of other things that I've always wanted to talk about when it comes to all the geekery that goes into like choosing a monitor that's not going to destroy your eyes over time or give you myopia, which is the fancy term for nearsightedness. So this is going to be a cool episode.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. Last night, I got my shipment in. That's right. Paleo Valley sent me their fermented meat sticks, which are amazing. They're these beef sticks. I gave a few to some of my friends already, which they love. I actually interviewed Stephen Gundry on my podcast, and he talked about how when you look at a lot of these blue zones, the ones that are the highest ranking in terms of longevity eat meat, but the meat that they eat is actually fermented. And that's exactly what they've done with Paleo Valley. They've actually taken really good grass-fed, grass-finished beef. They've fermented, which naturally introduces gut-friendly probiotics, but more importantly, breaks down a lot of the sugars that would normally cause meat to be harmful, concentrates the vitamins, makes it more digestible, and they have fantastic flavors. They got the original. They've got one that's like a summer sausage. They have a garlic sausage. They have a teriyaki. It's probably my favorite. And you can now get your hands on fermented beef sticks that basically blow that Slim Jim beef jerky out of the water. So check out paleovalley.com/Ben. That's paleovalley.com/Ben to try out these beef sticks and get 15% off your order. Not just beef sticks, fermented beef sticks.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show,
we blink less because we focus on something. You blink less also when you read a book. So it's not something special for the monitors.
The simple fonts use HoloPixel to render the font. This makes the fonts look edgy and crispy, but doesn't make the screen blurry, which is bad for the eyes.
In order to sleep properly, you don't need to look at blue light at night. That's basically it. And to not look at blue light, you can decrease your monitor core temperature.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I've got a quick question for you. Do you ever get headaches after you've been working on your computer for a long time, specifically your computer monitor, or eye strain, or maybe a little bit of actual irritation slash grumpiness, or even brain fog? And these are all things that I think a lot of people get, including myself, when they are staring at a laptop or at a computer monitor. And one thing that you got to bear in mind, and this is something that you'll notice if you ever take out like a video camera and record a computer monitor, is that monitors flicker. And that's one of the things, one of the many things that you'll learn about in today's podcast that is responsible for these issues with computer monitors. And there's even a term for this and the growing epidemic of nearsightedness and myopia caused by computers. It's known as computer vision syndrome, and it can actually destroy your eyes and create nasty headaches and strain and tired eyes long term. But my guest on today's podcast has spent a long time kind of figuring out how to tackle these issues, and he's even invented a special piece of software that you can install on your computer that does everything from controlling the brightness of the monitor with the help of your computer's video card to allowing you to have adequate clarity on your monitor without the actual flicker. It'll adjust your computer monitor settings based on the sun's position wherever you happen to be in the world. It'll decrease the amount of blue light from a computer monitor. And this guy also has a lot of really, really cool ideas in terms of, you know, setting up the software to be able to detect the number of blinks that you have. And, you know, he's got some great blog posts about everything from, you know, different LED lit back screens to older style screens that were built a little bit differently. And so we're going to navigate the whole world of computer monitors today and what the healthy ones are and how you can make your computer monitor healthy. My guest name is Daniel, and I'm probably going to butcher your last name, Daniel, but I believe it's Georgiev. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Georgiev.
He's
Bulgarian. Okay. This is
yeah. That's the tough part. I'll admit I'm not that fluent in Bulgarian, but Daniel is the guy who actually invented this piece of software, and he's actually himself also an athlete. He's a rower. He rowed for Bulgarian's national team for.
I was.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, my name is Daniel. I'm 20 years old programmer from Bulgaria, and I'm also the founder and creator of Iris. This is one popular software for eye protection, health, and productivity.
Yeah. Yeah, it's called Iris, right? I-R-I-S.
Yes, Iris.
Cool. Oh, and by the way, as you guys listen to Daniel and I, you'll be able to access all the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/iristech. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/iristech. Or if you just want to go check out Daniel's software, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/iris. So you were a rower, Daniel.
Yes, I was a rower until 17 years old. And I'll tell you the story about my sport experience because I spent like 10 years training all kinds of things. Basically, when I was young, I was living at the countryside in my country, Bulgaria. And until second grade, I was spending my time not training anything, basically drinking and smoking with friends. I'm not kidding. This was popular back then. And I wanted to be cool, maybe. I don't know. I just want to know that today I drink only water and I don't smoke.
Really? Then, you guys don't have any crazy fermented beverages that you drink over there in Bulgaria, like kombucha or anything like that?
Well, I try to drink only water.
No coffee, no tea?
Only on hackathons when I need to stay awake like 48 hours.
Oh, you do those hackathons, huh?
Yeah, I was doing them from time to time.
Interesting.
Then at third grade, I started playing football. Not American football, but soccer. This is really popular sport in Europe and really high paid. I thought I can become a really good player, and I trained a lot. And by a lot, I mean that I trained every day. And when I was not in the field, I was running and building my aerobic capacity. And this endurance actually helped me to be good at rowing several years later. So my goal was to become a footballer, but I kind of sucked at football. And at 13, after 5 years of training, I got kicked out of the team for not being good enough. Then I tried at one more team, but got kicked from there also. And this was a really sad period for me, since I put everything I had in this sport and still failed. I remember that I cried a week or two and then decided to try some other sport. You know, it's not the end of the world. I have no idea how, but I choose rowing. It seemed good to me, since I had a lot of endurance and I could run a couple of hours without getting tired.
Yeah,
initially,
that's a painful sport, rowing.
Yes, initially I sucked throwing also, but the good thing about rowing is that it's up to you. If you have the drive and you put the hours, you can become the best. So I persisted, trained 5 hours per day every day, more than anyone else. And after 2 years, I qualified for our national team. And this was my first success in life. And I think that I became addicted to achievements after this. After this moment, I realized that hard work beats anything. Since, you know, I don't have athletic body by default. When I started rowing, I was 180 centimeters and 50 kilograms, which was ugly to watch.
Mm. Yeah.
In the next...
That's the size of a computer programmer / hacker, not a rower.
Yes. But in the next years, I put 15 kilograms of muscles, but I was really skinny even then. I just trained more than anyone else. After the national team, I started to win some medals, to understand more about training, VO2 max, endurance, nutrition, you know, about these things.
Yeah, absolutely. So for your rowing training, what would like a typical training session look like for you?
Well, it was all kinds of things like running, swimming, skiing. It was crazy, just crazy. A lot of, I hit the gym. I started to train more and more professionally about 2 years when I got to the national team. We had the trainers and I managed to go to world championship, but I haven't become world championship or anything like that. I think I hit the plateau after this year and I was close to my genetic limit without using steroids. You know, I tried really hard, but there was no much improvement in my time and progress. And since I didn't want to use enhancers and I realized that I can become Olympic champion. I started programming, and after some months, I stopped with drawing. I think there was also another thing. I get a girlfriend back then and started to become more and more comfortable, you know, when you get a girl.
Yep, I hear you. You got soft. You discovered love and lost your drive for suffering.
You lost your drive. You lost your drive for becoming Olympic athlete. And you need this thing for this. Basically, I know that being the best in something requires a lot of time, and I don't want to put 10 years to it, you know? You need to put 10 years to become Olympic athlete, I think, at least.
So I'm curious, you know, to turn to the topic at hand, did you run into an issue at some point along the way, you know, being a rower / computer programmer, which is an interesting mix of activities? Did you run into a problem with your eyes at a certain point where you actually got inspired by issues that you were having to begin to delve into monitors and how they affect the eyes?
So about programming, well, I started reading some books about the same time that I started with drawing. I coded at night, and I was reading books between training in the afternoon. This for 4 years, and I became programmer. No, it's not, the process is not rocket science. Like everything in life, you should just put the effort into it. At 17, I started working as the programmer, and this is the point when my eye problem started. My eye problem started by this time. Before this, I don't know, maybe my monitor in home was good. It was some Mate Glossy, which is nice for the eyes. Basically, when I started to work as a programmer, I spent also my nights working on side projects. So, as you know, if I don't do something all the time, I would just kill myself. I don't like doing nothing. And with all this combined, I was spending more than 40 hours per day in front of the computer. And
wait,
after 6 months...
there's not 40 hours in a day. Did you say 14 hours?
14
hours per day. Got it.
14 hours per day in front of computer. And sorry, my English is not so good. Really.
That's okay.
And after 6 months, my eyes started burning like hell, you know. My first try was to start buying and using eye drops. This is... but after several more months and 12 empty eye drops bottles, I realized that this doesn't work. And I made an appointment with eye doctor, ophthalmologist, and he prescribed me glasses with 1.5 diopters. And I was like stunned. My vision was perfect my entire life, and I managed to f*** it up by sitting in front of the computers a lot.
Yeah, yeah. So you were basically becoming myopic. You from having to strain your eyes, you were developing like nearsightedness.
Yes.
Okay, and so at that point, you got prescribed glasses, and what did you do?
Well, I know it was time for a change, and I started to read everything about eye health and eye protection. I stopped using eye drops, and I started to take breaks every 30 minutes for 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Initially, I used a timer on my phone, but I was postponing it when I was in the zone, you know. And this is actually the reason I started working on Iris. This was February last year. I wanted to make a programmer to program which locks my screen every 30 minutes. So I forced myself to get up.
So that was initially all the program did, was it just would lock your screen and force you to get up?
Yes, it's strange how something stupid like this can turn in one of the best health softwares a year later.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, you've probably heard of the Pomodoro technique, right? Where you'll stop every, it kind of depends, right? Like every 55 minutes for 5 minutes, or every, you know, 25 minutes for 3 minutes. You know, there's a variety of different Pomodoro timing techniques. And I personally do that, right? Like my rule is I stop for every hour and I do 100 jumping jacks. That means like by the end of the day, I've done literally like thousands of jumping jacks. And that's just my little trick to keep lymph fluid and blood fluid flowing. But you were going every 30 minutes and you actually made a computer program that would shut down your ability to be able to work for a certain period of time every 30 minutes?
Yes, but I worked on this in the beginning and I was reading all the medical students I can find on the internet. I tried to use this. And at one point, I found one software called Flux, which is for blue light reduction. Maybe you have
heard. Flux. I've recommended that multiple times on the show, where it'll decrease the amount of blue light produced by your computer monitor based on when the sun is setting or a certain time of night in whatever part of the world you happen to be in, right?
Yes. But I wanted to have manual settings for it and wrote to the developers like 10, 20 times via email, Twitter, and every contact I can find them, but never get response. And after a couple of weeks, I said to myself, okay, if they don't care for them, I will do it myself and I will care about every user. And at this point, I started to get serious to develop Iris. I didn't have any users back then. It was only me, but I had a problem which I needed to solve and glasses which I needed to remove. And this is the point I started to do crazy things. I quit my job, left school, broke up with my girlfriend and dedicated myself 100% to Iris.
I bet your girlfriend was pretty happy about that, you actually dumping her just to figure out how to decrease the blue light on your monitor.
Yes.
It's a true hacker / programmer.
Yeah. I would say it was super hard to build something alone from scratch, but today Iris is awesome. It has more than 100,000 downloads. It's used in more than 140 countries, and many people love it.
I like it. I use it now myself instead of Flux because it has, and we'll jump into some of the things that you've programmed into it that go kind of above and beyond just decreasing the amount of blue light that the monitor actually creates. But before we jump into that and some of the things that Iris does, can you talk about Flickr, like computer monitor Flickr, and how that actually works? Like why do monitors Flickr?
Let's start by saying that there are no Flickr-free monitors and screens. If you don't want Flickr in your life, go live in a cave or buy an A-ink monitor and use it for everything.
Yeah. What about Kindles, like the Kindle Paperwhite and stuff like that? Do they Flickr?
Yes, they are A-ink and they're good for dice.
Okay, so those are so when you're talking about screens that Flickr, you're talking about like computer monitors, laptops, but there are some notepads that don't Flickr, right?
Yes, let me explain what I mean by Flickr. The monitor is turning on and off all the time, but with high frequency, which most of the time we don't perceive. The different backlights use different frequency for on and off. For example, CCFL uses 175 hertz, and for LED it starts from 90 hertz to over 400.
So CCFL, those are the old school monitors, the cold cathode fluorescent lamps, right? That's what you call those?
Yes, but there is actually more. First, those with the lowest frequency are the worst for the eyes, obviously. And let me explain why is this. But actually, CCFL are not so bad. The core thing of our eyes is called iris, just like my software. It opens and closes to control the amount of light entering the eye through the pupil. The pupil is the black thing of the eye.
Right.
In the dark, iris opens, and when there is a lot of light, it closes. Now imagine what happens when your monitor turns on and off all the time. The iris starts to contract just like a muscle. The lower the frequency, the bigger it will be the amplitude of this contraction. Since the eye has more time for the movement. In order for our brain to not detect this on and off thing, we need a frequency of over
2000 Hz, which is not present in today's monitors, and it's actually not possible, since the diodes in the backlight will burn after some time. Basically, this is the reason why we feel eye pain when we sit in front of computers, and what I do with Iris is to set this frequency to the biggest possible amount, or at least to not decrease it when you change brightness. When a monitor is set to maximum brightness, the LEDs are typically glowing at full strength.
Right.
100%. If you reduce your brightness settings in the menu, for example, 50%, the LEDs need to emit less light.
When you're saying the LEDs, you're referring to the LEDs.
Yes, yes.
Okay, got it.
LEDs. This is done by inserting small breaks or pauses in which the LEDs turn off for a very short time. When reducing the brightness settings in the menu, further, the breaks become longer, basically.
Okay, so if I turn the brightness setting on my monitor down, like if I have a regular LED-based monitor, or even one of those old-school CCFL monitors that have the backlighting on them, what happens is you actually create this catch-22 because your brightness is turned down, so you have maybe less glare on your eyes, but then the flickering increases when you decrease the brightness, right?
Yes, and this method of introducing breaks to reduce the brightness is called PWM, pulse width modulation. And it sucks.
pulse width modulation.
Yes.
Okay, so when I reduce the brightness level on a monitor and the monitor automatically starts to introduce these little breaks in terms of what it is I'm looking at, this flicker, that's called PWM.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
This PWM technique is used by almost all monitors, since it's the cheaper one. In simple terms, if you reduce your brightness, you reduce your monitor frequency also, which is bad for the eyes. And Iris has innovative brightness, which reduces the emitted light without changing the frequency of the backlight.
So how do you actually remove the brightness without removing the frequency of the backlight? Like why wouldn't monitors just do this in the first place?
Because it changes colors a little bit. Okay. And for some people, color is important.
Okay, so for like a graphic designer, maybe like a gamer, they would want like a monitor with really bright, vibrant colors, and maybe they're willing to get that at the risk of their eyes, right? At a risk of more flicker or more brightness. But what you're saying is that most people wouldn't really notice the difference between a regular monitor producing a bunch of flickering or a monitor with the Iris software installed that's allowing you to both reduce the brightness and reduce the flickering.
That's right. And okay. I'm actually trying to help the designers also, since the new versions of Iris can make these kind of adjustments only on part of the screen. And for example, your center part. Yes, and it will be really cool, but I'm not finished with this.
So where does color temperature fit in here? Because I've seen that monitors, and I have one of these. I'll get into the monitor that I just bought recently because I think it's interesting. I'll talk about that in a second. But color temperature, does that have to do with color brightness as well?
Let's say that color temperature is about blue light. It's measured in kelvins.
Okay.
And basically, the bigger the value of the color temperature, the more blue light is emitted from the screen. The default color temperature of normal monitor is 6,500 kelvins. The important thing is that blue light, it's important to be less at night.
Right.
Let me explain why. The hormone responsible for our sleep is called melatonin. And in order to sleep, you need to produce X amount of melatonin. The interesting thing about melatonin is that it produces when there is no light. And more importantly, when there is no blue light.
Right.
So in order to sleep properly,
you don't need to look at blue light at night. That's basically it. And to not look at blue light, you can decrease your monitor core temperature.
Okay, so the color temperature setting is, so if I go into like monitor settings and I just decrease temperature, that's going to literally decrease the amount of blue light. So we can say that temperature is synonymous with blue light, and then brightness would be synonymous with flickering, meaning that if I were to decrease the temperature, I would decrease the amount of blue light that I'm looking at. And if I were to decrease the brightness, unfortunately, I would increase the flicker. So those are a few settings that we would want to bear in mind when we're talking about eye glare or about the shutdown of melatonin production, correct?
Yes, that's right. And when you reduce the core temperature, the monitor starts to look yellowish, then red.
Yeah, and I've noticed that. Like when I'll use Flux or now when I use Iris, the color will start to change a little bit. And somebody who hasn't been accustomed to seeing these devices, these software programs in use, they'll like look over my shoulder at my phone or at my computer and they'll be like, why is the color of the monitor yellow or why is it orange? And I don't even notice it anymore. It just automatically happens at night. What about glossy versus matte displays and glare? Does the actual glossiness of the screen matter?
I just wanted to finish the last one. Takes a day or two to get used to the cores, but after some days, you just can't live without this thing. I'm sure it's the same thing for you.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, and I'll take that one step further. I mean, for me now, not only can I barely bear to, at night, look at a monitor that doesn't have something like Iris or Flux installed on it, or on the new iOS iPhone devices, the new sleep, I think it's called sleep mode. On the Kindle, it's called sleep mode. On the iPhone, it's called night shift mode. So I can't bear to look at a device when it doesn't have that enabled in the evening because I feel like it just automatically jolts me awake. But I actually now, and especially more so after speaking recently with Dr. Mercola on my podcast, who wears these all day long now, I just can't operate on a screen without wearing my glare-blocking glasses in the evening. So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, it's really changed the way that I think about how my eyes interact with a monitor, and perhaps I'm a little bit spoiled now. But what about this like, because I know that some monitors will have like a glossy display, some will have a matte display. How about that? Is that important? Is that something that you play around with as well?
Let's start with that. Matte is better for the eyes than glossy. But glossy, it's better to get exact colors on the screen. This thing is important for designers, artists, and people who work with color. You can turn glossy screen to matte with buying anti-glare protector and putting it on the screen, but there is no way to turn matte screen into glossy. I will try to explain why glossy is bad for the eyes. When you use glossy screen, it's like mirror, and you will see your reflection from the screen. But you also see the image of the screen. Your eye gets confused and tries to switch the focus between the two images all the time, and your eyes start to hurt. This is the reason why matte is better. Matte screens do not create these mirror reflections, but as I said, you can always buy anti-glare protector for glossy screen.
Okay, so matte screen would be like the Kindle Paperwhite, for example.
It's not like that. Matte screen is... No, it's not a ink display.
Okay. So do they actually make computer monitors that have a matte screen instead of glossy?
Yes. It's like 50-50. There are many, many matte screens. They just don't... they don't reflect light. For example, all Apple monitors are glossy. They are like reflective, you know,
Mm-hmm.
But there are screens. My screen is like this. There are screens which are matte, and they are something like sound coating. I'm not sure how it was
But I think, sorry to interrupt, I think the, have you heard of these IZO monitors, E-I-Z-O?
Yes.
Okay, I'm pretty sure, because I have the Flex Scan, the E-I-Z-O Flex Scan, and I just got this while researching monitors, because I was trying to find something that would allow me to use your software, this Iris software, but also would allow me to have like a non-glossy display. And it's a little bit more like looking, I guess, it seems like I'm looking at a Kindle Paperwhite, kind of like mate anti-glare screen. But then what I do is I plug it into my laptop. So I've got an external computer monitor plugged into my laptop, and then I've got the Iris software running on my laptop, which I believe when it makes the adjustments on my laptop, it affects this FlexScan monitor that I'm using. So I'm kind of getting the best of both worlds. But that's the setup that I currently have, because this FlexScan monitor, it has settings on it that will allow you to do things like decrease the temperature, and to using your software, decrease the brightness without increasing the flicker. But it is, I think, a matte display. And for those of you listening in, that's matte, matte display versus glossy. So that's your recommendation, is to go with something that's matte when you can versus glossy, right?
Or buy anti-glare protector.
Anti-glare protector. Okay, I'll find that.
Or glossy.
Is there like a brand that you like?
I don't use. I use Iris.
Okay, so if you have Iris installed in your computer, it'll automatically make it so that you don't necessarily have to buy like a screen anti-glare protector.
No, it's not like this. I mean, if you have a light above your head, it will show a reflection, and Iris can't fix this. Actually, I think about how to fix this, but it's not fixable.
Okay, got it. But you could use... Have you used these FlexScan monitors before by IZO?
No. I know that BenQ monitors have some technology for eye protection.
What's that other brand that you just talked about?
BenQ.
BenQ? How do you spell that?
Ben capital Q.
Ben capital Q. Okay, cool. I'll put a link to that one in the show notes as well. BenQ. Okay, got it. All right, so we've got glossy versus matte. We've got the color temperature. We've got the brightness that we need to take into account. I've seen you talk also, because you have some great blog posts over on the Iris website about the actual font. Why does the type of font that you look at on a screen matter, and can you adjust the actual font settings to be able to increase the eye friendliness of what it is that you're looking at?
Yes, this was something I researched at the beginning of this year. Let's start that. Always prefer looking at bigger fonts, and if possible, read sans serif fonts. What I mean by sans serif is that look at Arial and Verdun. Times New Roman sucks for your eyes, but only on screen. In print, it actually helps you to read faster and it's more pleasurable, but on screen, it's not good. Aside from the bigger font and read Arial, there is also font rendering technologies. Let me explain.
Okay, so before you jump into font rendering technologies, what you're saying is like the Times New Roman, where it's got like little, if you look at it closely, it's got like, almost like little designs on the end of each letter. What you're saying is like a more of a, like a plain Jane type of Arial font would be the ideal type of font to look at if you wanted to reduce eye strain.
On the screen.
Okay, the screen. Got it. So what is it about these font rendering technologies that you're going to get into?
Well, every pixel on the screen contains three diodes, red, green, and blue. They are close to one another on the backlight, and when the three of them glow at full strength, we see white pixel. If none glows, we see black pixel. The easiest way to render fonts is to use the whole pixel, but this makes the letters edgy and crispy. And there are only like 10 fonts which can be visualized good this way. Even Even back when the first computers came out and when Apple II was created, they made new type of font rendering called anti-aliasing. After some time, Microsoft created SuPixel rendering technology that we today know as ClearType, and Apple created also SuPixel rendering with font smoothing. I can try to explain how they work and which is best for the eyes if you want.
Yeah, sure, because I'm actually curious about what kind of font I should be looking at. I spend a lot of time writing. I spend a lot of time reading on the computer. So, yeah, I definitely want to make sure that I'm using the correct type of font.
So the simple fonts use HolePixel to render the font. This makes the fonts look edgy and crispy, but doesn't make the screen blurry, which is bad for the eyes. Anti-aliasing works by using shades of gray on nearby pixels. This makes the font look better, but they are actually blurry and it's difficult for the eyes to focus on the letters. The next generation of rendering technology uses not the whole neighbor pixel, but only one part of it. As I told you, one pixel has three subpixels, red, green, and blue. So the subpixel rendering technology uses shades of this subpixel to render the font, like blue, for example.
Okay.
This also makes the fonts blurry, but not as much as anti-aliasing, and it's better for the eyes. Better subpixel is better than anti-aliasing. Apple also uses this kind of subpixel rendering technologies, but they smooth the fonts more, and the Microsoft way is better for the eyes, since the fonts are not so blurry.
Okay, so the fonts are not blurry, even though you might not be able to detect the type of font rendering technology that's used on your monitor. What you're saying is that if you're looking at a pixel font that's sharp and crispy with no blurring, you're going to strain less, even if it's subconscious. But some forms of rendering of fonts that are used in current rendering technology introduces more blurriness based off of the way that font is presented on the monitor screen.
Yes, that's right. Simple font rendering.
And what's the name of the type of font rendering that would be considered more blurry or bad for the eyes?
Can you tell me again the question?
What's the actual name of the type of font rendering that makes something look more blurry, or that you would consider to be the type of font rendering that would be bad for the eyes? Is that the clear type rendering?
Well, all renderings, like all modern renderings, anti-aliasing, subpixel rendering, all the two, they make the fonts blurry, but this is to make the font look better. So simple font rendering, whole pixel, it's best for the eyes, but it's hard to read.
That doesn't seem to make sense, that it's you mean it's hard to read, like in terms of not looking quite as good, or...
Yes, not looking quite as good.
Okay, but it's not hard on the eyes.
Yes, because you can focus on the edges, you know?
Okay,
your eyes moves on the screen in so-called cascades. It jumps from... You need to focus on something. And when the font is blurry, it's hard for the eye to focus on something.
Gotcha. So you want the type of font rendering called simple font rendering.
Well, I have added all of them to Iris. I don't know why, but some users actually prefer the Apple-style font rendering, which is the most blurry. And they tell me that their eyes hurt less with this font. So I have added all of them to Iris, and you just choose them. I use for myself, I use ClearType. But if you're really hardcore about your eyes, use simple fonts.
Okay, so I can go into the settings on my Iris software, and I can basically select... I've actually got it open right now. So is that under the advanced settings that I can go in and change the font?
Yes.
Okay.
It's fonts page.
So if I go here and I go to the fonts page.
Open Notepad with big font and you will see the difference. Oh, if you open Notepad and you write some letters and you see the difference immediately, you know?
Yeah, interesting. Okay, so I see here I can actually change the font rendering, and I would want to use like a simple font rendering.
You can also see the difference on the icons on the desktop.
Okay, got it. Cool. I love it. All right, so in addition to font rendering, you also talk about color. In terms of like the color used on a website or the color used on a web page, does that also affect the eyes, like the type of color that you're looking at?
I actually researched the biological effects on color now. Basically, blue light is not good at night for the reasons I told you before about melatonin secretion. It's the only scientifically proven color which, when removed at night, helps your eyes hurt less and helps you to sleep better. The branch of science about this is called color psychology. But I still don't know a lot about the subject. Basically, colors are not the problem. It's the light. Actually, colors are not, but we see colors when there is absence of light. So our colors are good, but some of them make us respond in different psychological way. For example, green is for nature, black is for status and style, red is for aggression, and blue is for trust. Something like this.
Got it. Yeah, I know that there's a really fascinating book about this called Drunk Tank Pink, in which they talk about how like websites will make a website a certain color to increase trust or increase your propensity to purchase or increase your propensity to click. Like apparently the best color, for example, for like a buy button on a website is the color orange because it makes you want to buy something. Or the best color for like a donation page would be like pink because it makes you feel like apparently more laid back or more willing to make a donation. But I notice on the Iris software, you've got all these different settings where I can do like washout, I can do grayscale, I can do inverted colors. In terms of the type of thing that would be best for my eyes, as far as like all the different color settings that you have available, as far as like color effects with Iris, is there something that you would recommend as far as like the best color setting to use if I'm just like working, it's at night, or I want to decrease eye strain? Do you pretty much just switch to grayscale at that point? Is that the best way to go?
First, send me the link after this because this was super interesting. And then I actually made color effects for screen inversion. I wanted when I look at really white page to invert it to be not black and white, but white black. You know, to invert the colors to make the whole page black and only the font white. This is why I made color effects, and some users wanted more settings and I just added them. I personally only use grayscale from time to time and inversion and color inversion.
Yeah, I've been using grayscale because it's pretty simple. I just go in and click on the software to change it to grayscale, and it's actually, when I'm writing, especially in blogging, I don't care that much about the colors. You know, if I'm shopping on Amazon, I kind of like the colors because it's fun to see the colors of the things that you're buying, etc. But for just typing, working on blog posts, etc., I'm a huge fan of this this grayscale setting that you have. So that's interesting how color plays such an important role as well. And I didn't realize I could actually change up all the coloring on my monitor until I started playing around with this software. What about blinking? I noticed you have a blog post about blinking and blink detection. Does your software actually detect the number of blinks, or how does that work?
Yes, it's true, but I still haven't found a way how to make a good feature from this. And I actually disabled it by default in the newest version. Basically, as the time passed, I realized that it's a little bit creepy when you install some software and it turns on your camera. This scares some users, and there is no benefit in knowing that you don't blink enough. You will never blink enough when you use your PC, and now I think that you don't need an app for that. Maybe Maybe you need to place some picture somewhere to remind you to blink, and this will be enough. However, I created something useful from this artificial intelligence code, and Iris can detect your room lighting by using your camera and can adjust your display brightness accordingly, which is useful and nice feature.
Okay, it's again, so if I'm in like a dim room, it will automatically detect that and increase brightness?
In dim room, it will decrease it.
Because you wouldn't want that contrast as much between a whole bunch of brightness on the screen and less light in like a dim room.
Yes, you want your screen brightness to match your room lighting. Something like this.
Got it. Now, in this blog post, and I'll link to this blog post that you wrote that's really interesting on your website, on the Iris website. You talk about how we don't blink as much when we're working on the computer. Why is that?
Let me just tell that I want to make something about yawning. Since yawning is a better way to produce tears and moisture in the eyes than blinking, which points me to why blinks are important. They're important for moisturizing the eyes. When you blink, you moisture your eyes with tears, which helps to protect your eyes. However, as I said, I think that yawning is better for moisture your eyes. The reason is that it's the natural way to produce tears. And the second awesome thing is that yawning is contagious on subconscious level, which means that if I yawn, you yawn too.
Yeah, and that's actually, all this talk about yawning is actually making me want to yawn right now. But I never actually thought about yawning when I'm working on my computer. What you're saying is like, if I yawn, it actually helps to moisturize my eyes?
Yes, at first I think that blinking more is better, but now I think that yawning more is better.
Interesting.
Because try to yawn and you immediately notice how your eyes get moistured.
Yeah.
Which is really good, and you need only to blink one or two times to moisture the entire eye after yawning.
So maybe you need like if simply hearing someone talking about yawning, because this is making me want to yawn right now, or seeing someone yawn causes one to yawn, couldn't you just have something pop up on the Iris software, or maybe you do already, I don't know about this, that would be like a picture of somebody yawning, you know, like every 20 minutes or something like this, you know, have that actually appear, or have just the word yawn appear to induce that yawning sensation in people?
Well, I'm thinking about playing yawning sounds or showing yawning people from time to time, but maybe it's better just to place some picture of you yawning on the desk and remind yourself. I mean, I want to make it really, really great, and I need really a big problem, because you can fix this problem only by showing a picture of someone yawning. You don't need application for this.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, interesting. So if I activate the use camera setting, I'm looking at it right now on the Iris software, that's the setting that will allow my actual computer video camera to detect the dimness in the room and adjust the brightness accordingly?
Yes, when you activate this, there is show blink screen somewhere in the settings.
Okay, got it. Cool. I love playing around with this stuff. So go ahead.
Because you asked me about why do we blink less. We blink less because we focus on something. You blink less also when you read a book. So it's not something special for the monitors.
Okay, gotcha.
We blink like one time per minute when we look at the computer, which is bad. Try to blink always more. Good blink rate for optimal eye health is about 15 times per minute. 15.
Got it. So you've got a few other features kind of worked into Iris. You've got your brakes, which will automatically bring up a reminder to brake at certain intervals that you have set throughout the day. You've got the adjustments in the color, the adjustments in the color temperature, the adjustments in the brightness, and this can all be based off of using, for example, automatic detection of where you happen to be in the world. So it'll automatically detect, I'm assuming, when the sun goes down, where I happen to be at in the world.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Gotcha. So very, very similar, very similar to Flux for something like that, right?
Well, after they didn't respond to me, I made basically Flux into Iris.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like Flux on steroids. Now you've also got in here exercises. So eye exercises, neck exercises, and back exercises. And will these, can I set these also to automatically pop up at certain intervals, or are these ones that I need to manually start?
I actually don't use them. This is why I don't spend many. I try to, if I use something a lot, this means that this is important. I don't use, I exercise a lot, and I actually think to remove them in the future because, you know, I want to everybody to use Iris and not to be, not everybody exercise, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I like it personally. Like, I'm looking at your eye exercises, for example. You've got the cue to do side-to-side eye movement. You've got the cue to do up-and-down eye movement, moving eyes diagonally, massaging the eyes, different concentration exercises. I like that. But you know what my recommendation would be is if I set this to interrupt my workflow, let's say every 30 minutes or every 45 minutes, then what I'd like ideally is for it to actually automatically bring up. Let's say I set it so that, okay, every 30 minutes, I want the reminder to do the series of eye exercises that you have in here, or the series of neck exercises for the next 30-minute break, and then the series of back exercises for the next 30-minute break. I think that would be a cool feature so that for each of your Pomodoro techniques, right, you have a different body part that tends to suffer when you're working on a computer automatically getting worked throughout the day. So it's almost like done for you. So, you know, it automated, and your computer monitor is just telling you what to do when it's setting you onto that break that you're taking throughout the day. Does that make sense?
Just write this and I'll make it for you. I'll make an option, but yeah, it will be disabled by default.
Call it the Ben Greenfield Iris exercise option.
Yes, it will only be exercise options.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's right. Then I want a royalty on all sales of the software. Cool. Yeah. So you've got your eye, neck, and back exercises added in there as well, which I love. But I would love to see those also like automated as part of the Pomodoro technique, which you can also set. I see on setting, I guess on the main screen of Iris, I can have the Pomodoro technique to break every X number of minutes right now it's set on break every 30 minutes for 5 minutes, but you can set it for whatever you want. This is really cool stuff. So I guess my last question for you is in terms of compatibility, et cetera, you know, we have some people who listen in who are Windows people, some people who are Mac people. Does this work with any software? Or are there any limitations on it right now? I mean, can I use it, or I guess any operating system? Can I use it with like Windows operating system, Mac operating system? Like will it work on any computer?
Yes, it works on any computer. But for example, because I need time to synchronize all the settings, the Windows version is the most developed, you know. For example, I have also Android application. If you write Iris Tech into Play Store, you will find the application. It's a game for blue light reduction and brightness reduction. It's free, absolutely free. But I don't want to monetize it because I don't think the phones are the problem. I think I tried to make it to everything. Actually, there is also Chrome extension, which can change some websites' themes to make it black, for example, YouTube, Facebook, and other sites. I just work really hard to be on everything.
Cool. I like it. Well, I'll link to this in the show notes. So it's bengreenfieldfitness.com/iristech. If you want to go to the show notes and see the BenQ monitors that Daniel recommended, the ISO monitor, the FlexScan monitor is the one that I use, the anti-glare screen protectors, and some of the other stuff that we talked about. And then if you just want to go get this software, go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/iris, and you can grab this and download it to your laptop or to your PC or wherever else you want to install this software. And I'm using it every day now. So I have it installed on all my computers, and it's what I'm using now to ensure that I'm not getting the eye strain and the irritation, the brain fog, and all these things that tend to happen when you, when you're a blogger like I am, who's at a computer for a long period of time. So, Daniel, this is really cool stuff, and I want to thank you for not only coming on the podcast, but also for creating this excellent piece of software.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
All right. Well, cool. Well, this is Ben Greenfield and Daniel. I'll try your last name one more time, Daniel. Jorjev?
Try with Georgiev. Georgiev is fine.
Georgiev, I was close. Signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com. Check out BenGreenfieldFitness.com/Iris and have a great day.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.